everybody over there.
Yeah, you guys too.
Seth, have a good weekend.
You too, brother.
You guys have a great one. We'll meet you back here Monday for more mornings on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Quality Foods puts you first. No self-checkouts here. Get the groceries you want, bagged and loaded in your car if you'd like. That's quality service from real people you can expect. Delivery and pickup are available at West Grand. Visit QualityFoodsWisRapids.com. Or if you can't order online, just call West Grand and they'll take it. Don't forget the deli for delicious meats, cheese, salads, and complete hot and cold meals. Quality Foods, West Grand and Baker Drive. Locally owned and putting you and the community first.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. There's a new sign of economic strength. Despite rising inflation, rising interest rates, and a slowdown in the tech sector, the Labor Department says employers kept hiring, adding 263,000 jobs last month. Unemployment remained steady at 3.7%. Bankrate's Mark Hamrick.
There's generally good distribution here of job growth among sectors, with solid gains for leisure and hospitality, healthcare, government, information, manufacturing, and construction. Interestingly, here in the holiday season, retailing, as well as warehousing and distribution, posted job declines.
The Dow down 293. President Biden scheduled to sign a bill this hour to avert a rail strike that analysts say could have plunged the country into recession. Correspondent Scott McFarlane is on Capitol Hill.
This deal does prevent a walk-off of nearly 115,000 rail workers and snarled holiday shipping traffic and potentially another spike in inflation.
Members of four of 12 unions had rejected the administration brokered agreement over paid sick days. Russian troops still shelling a city on the Black Sea, recaptured by Ukrainian forces. And winter's coming cold is adding to the misery. CBS's MTS Tayyab.
Ever since their humiliating retreat, Moscow has been hammering Kherson relentlessly. It's a misery. Anastasia, an instructor at the university, knows all too well.
It's so cold. You have no electricity. You have no heating. You have no water. But you're free. You have freedom.
The governor says three people have been killed in the latest attacks. InfoWars host Alex Jones has just filed for personal bankruptcy protection in Texas as he faces $1.5 billion in court judgments for spreading conspiracy theories about the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. Jones laughed after a jury in Connecticut ordered him to pay damages to families of the victims in October. At the time, he said he had less than $2 million to his name. Kanye West was suspended from Twitter last night after posting an image of the Star of David with a swastika in the middle. Elon Musk said it violated the rule on inciting violence. Rick Newman at Yahoo Finance.
It's as if he thought that these people would all behave better just because he suddenly bought the company, which is not happening.
Coming to Broadway. A musical set to Britney Spears hits. Producers announced this morning Once Upon a One More Time will open in June. It tells the story of some fairy tale princesses gathered for a book club meeting when a rogue fairy godmother drops copies of Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique into their laps. Dow down 288. This is CBS News.
Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Visit libertymutual.com to learn more.
Are you more than $10,000 in debt? Feel like you're on a never-ending treadmill, staying in one place and never getting ahead with those minimum payments? You feel like there's no way out? Get off the endless debt treadmill and start saving money each month. There are programs in place to help you get free of your debt and you don't have to pay the entire amount you owe. The program at Total Financial Freedom can help you get debt-free in months instead of decades. Call Total Financial now at 800-208-1312. 800-208-1312.
President Trump has announced, and Ron DeSantis is rising fast. Who do you support for 2024? Newsmax wants to know what you think. Vote in the Newsmax poll. Just text the word FISH to 39747. That's FISH to 39747. It takes just seconds. Text FISH to 39747. Let your voice be heard. And watch Newsmax today.
Pride.
Left corner, three in the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
If you've been listening, you know you can get your free credit report at annualcreditreport.com. But how do you use it? Paying attention to key pieces of information on the report, including your personal information, open credit accounts, and credit inquiries, can help you not only understand your credit standing and catch any errors, but regularly checking your credit report may also help you identify potential fraud or identity theft. Go to annualcreditreport.com to get started with your free credit report, and keep listening for more tips. This message has been brought to you by the United Way of Southwood and Adams County's Financial Stability Coalition.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Overcast this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 45. Southerly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Chance for mixed precipitation. Lows dip down to about 10 above. Bright sunshine expected tomorrow. Highs level off around 19. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this December 2nd, 2022. It is 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 10:30, we're going to welcome in Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, a bunch of the actors and the director from Miracle on 34th Street. Right now, joining us on the phone, Representative Scott Crew. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How have you been, man? It's been a while.
It has. I took a nice little break there in November to finish up some business, and now we're back, and getting ready for Christmas and state budget coming up right after that. So just keeps rolling and rolling.
You know, interesting you bring that up, Scott. I definitely wanted to talk with you about that, and we'll certainly get to that. Dan, also wanted to wish you good health. Hope things are going well. Really appreciate the time. We missed you last month. It's nice to have you here this month, and especially to be able to get into some of the things that coming out of the political, you know, season and getting into a new year. You mentioned the budget. I want to touch on that. But before we get to all of those things, Scott, I want to know, was there a way, or are you still looking for a way to try to like take, I don't want to say take credit, but to be able to take some kind of positive from the Badgers hiring Luke Fickell. Have you been able to?
It's funny because, you know, I've known Jim Leonard personally for, oh, it has to be close to 15 years now, right? Mm-hmm. So it was super exciting at the time. And then you start seeing some of the things that happen in even the Minnesota game. And then you're kind of like, oh, something's going to happen. Something's up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of see it coming, so I feel bad for Jimmy. But, man, that guy's got a future ahead of him. And if it's not the Badgers, he'll be making a heck of a lot more money in the NFL coaching somewhere. So, I don't, you know, I feel bad for Jimmy for a little bit, but he'll be just fine, I'm pretty sure. And Fickell is... that's one heck of a hire. That's outside the box thinking there. So,
I mean, really, a big kudos to McIntosh and that whole school, really. But really, it just nobody saw that one coming. And I'm right with you, Jim Leonard. Since his college days to every day he was a pro, one of my favorite safeties of all time. Loved watching him. Loved watching him return punts and everything. A really big fan of his. And anybody who knows anything about football knows that that man knows how to call defense. So he's going to have a job. He'll be okay. Just an interesting hire, interesting situation, and a light way to bring up, to ease into the conversation here.
That's right.
Because we're going to stay in Madison, and I want to touch on some things going on in Madison. You brought up the state budget. Let's go ahead and start right there, Scott. What should Wisconsinites know going into this conversation, know about going into the budget conversation?
Yeah, you know, for me, I always talk about the budget probably close to a year ahead of when it passes. So it usually passes in the end of June in even number years. But by the time it gets to that point, that is a good 6 to 9 months of work. And for where I usually try to start, it's a good year ahead of time, because now is the time where, you know, whether it's municipalities, counties, schools, tech colleges, hospitals, you name it, this is where those individuals need to have communication with people representing them, whether it's locally, statewide, nationally, and make their voices heard on the things they need. So this is where, you know, between Thanksgiving and Christmas, my office always sets up, hundreds of meetings with schools and municipalities and everybody and anyone in between to try to make sure that by New Year's, we've got a good grasp on the things that are needed in my district and maybe a little beyond for the counties I represent as well, to try to have a fighting chance to get some of those things put in front of the committees that need to hear about them, get them onto agendas for different boards that are trying to make their requests to the governor's office. So all this soup making really starts like right now. Mm.
Are there people that will, you'll be interviewing that we'd be surprised by? That, I think we would think of certain, organizations, certain groups, certain government agencies, but are there any that, you're talking to those people? We wouldn't have guessed that one.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It gets down into the 1,000-foot level in our communities when we're talking to groups like, for example, ODC is a group that usually we have conversations with throughout the years on budget stuff and see if we can help supplement some of the things that go on there. And this year in particular, with this big debate on abortion policy and which way we're going, are we talking to first choice pregnancy centers? Are we talking family planning options? Who are we talking to because of which way the policy might end up? So it really depends on which way statewide policy is going to go to decide who we further have conversations with. But we expand to all sides of any issue to try to figure out, try to read the tea leaves on where state policy might be to help the individuals are going to have to react to it afterwards.
Do you see some hard cuts in the future? And don't have to be specific about where those might be, but if you want to be, certainly can be. But do you think that might be on the forefront?
Yeah, I don't think I see any widespread cuts coming up here. And I think there's a big pressure on government, especially the state level, with the $6.6 billion surplus to spend more. But I think both sides will be, disappointed or surprised, however they want to portray it, that we're not going to be spending that $6.6 billion surplus on all new kinds of programs and ideas. And we're also not going to be cutting spending just to make sure that we can create a bigger surplus. So I think, a lot of places we're at, I think funding levels are pretty appropriate. We're going to have to make some additional adjustments to shared revenue for our cities and towns so they can continue to supply services and do road maintenance. We have to, deal with their education issues and make sure that all facets of education, whether it's K-12, public universities, tech colleges, that they have the funding they need because of inflation to keep doing what they're doing. But no, I don't see any major cuts coming to anybody in the next state budget.
Now that we're, through the election process and everything for this current election, at least, is it time, and especially when we're talking a budget, and you've got so many different organizations and different people that are affected by this, red, blue, undecided, whatever, all in the above. Is this one of those times where there is a lot more, bridge building across the aisle, working together a lot more of that? Or is it still a very decisive time? Because I think talking to just people here in Wood County and different people, Republican, Democrat, all of the above, all the people I talked to, first off, voted. So I think that's encouraging. But the biggest thing that stood out to people, I didn't hear people talking about inflation or this or that. I heard what is going to get done. We have a Democratic governor and we have a Republican. So how is this going? Are you guys going to be able to get things done? Are we going to be able to look towards our governor, our Congress, all of this working together like Wisconsin is? It's a purple state. Are we going to be able to see more of that? Do you think you're going to be able to see that?
Yeah, and I think, like we've talked about on the show a few times before, when you look at the last three sessions, we're in the 90% bracket on being able to get bills together and get them signed and done. We totally revamped the governor's last day budget, and he signed it within days. I mean, so 75% of what we do goes into the budget. And when the legislature recreated that document last year on different priorities, the governor still said, fine, let's just get something done. So both sides have been doing that, and I think it's overplayed in the media. But yes, I did hear the same thing from people is, and the election results showed it, is people really stayed with what they had. They didn't make much of a change in anything to elect Tony Evers and then elect Ron Johnson and then still elect almost a supermajority in the Assembly and then one in the Senate. So it was pretty much a status quo budget. And for me locally, to be at 62% now, it's less of a having to build bridges process, because when you've got 62% of the electorate behind your philosophy already, there's a lot less people to try to bring back on board. So, yeah, we do reach out to people that had issues with us throughout the campaign and try to build that bridge again. But it's easier and easier every session when those numbers keep increasing. We don't have to spend so much time doing that throughout the course of the budget building process. So now, you know, when we talk about how do those numbers go back into priorities and how do we get the governor to sign those things, that's exactly why we have a committee process. It's exactly why the budget goes through a 6-month process to get things vetted, because honestly, there's going to be ideas on my side of the aisle that, you know, we're going to fight against. There's going to be ideas from the other side of the aisle that we might like. And those are the things we take to our committees, to our caucuses, to all of this process that normally doesn't let bad ideas get signed into law. So I think, you know, the partisanship thing gets overplayed a bit because this process is so in-depth that it just kind of filters out bad stuff inherently. Mm.
And Scott, when it comes to why we talk about the people that were voted in and the most recent results of this most recent election, I want to get into the a little bit of that in a second. Before we do, I don't like to waste anybody's time, especially our representatives or anything. So I don't mean to seem like I'm doing that here, but I do want to go into how a bill gets passed. Because the other thing that I came across talking to people, I just randomly asked this whole thing. I had two people out of a lot more than that that could tell me how a bill is passed. And so when they're telling me that, oh, nothing's going to get done because of the Democratic governor and the Republican this and all that, and I'm like, well, you don't even know how something gets done. You know, and it's scary when you look at the statistics of the average American, not just Wisconsinites, the average American that does not know how a bill gets passed. And, you know, there's plenty of websites nowadays like Ballotopia and different things where we can keep up to date on your guys', you know, statistics, if you will, your baseball stats on the back of your card. We can see a lot of that nowadays. And so people look at those things and they say, well, this representative, this congressman or what have you, they're not doing anything or they're not getting a lot done. And well, this is why they're not getting it done. And there's a lot of assumptions going on, but there's not a lot of facts going on. And I think that it's important for people. I'm sorry if it's, you know, common knowledge out there to many. It's unfortunately not common enough. So let's go ahead and discuss real quickly how a bill gets passed.
Yeah, I mean, and that's how Carl and I started this whole thing 12 years ago, was talking about how this is a tutorial and how to make sure people know how to interact. So it's never a waste of time to do that. So I'm glad you asked, because it is important to know that, you know, you go back to the old Schoolhouse Rock, you know, I'm just a bill sitting on Capitol Hill type of thing. Mm-hmm. And those were important then for a reason, and they're important now for a reason, because things don't just show up on somebody's desk in Madison and somebody just decides yes or no. That is exactly what this process is that I'm talking about. The state budget itself is a bill, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where we take these ideas from any stakeholder that's wanting to give ideas of a certain bill. And to be honest, we don't get a lot of activity on trying to, you know, get people to get excited about giving us ideas or input on things most of the time. So that's where we go out and do our research and our homework and call in stakeholders in different areas and things that affect them differently, whether it's county government, the road construction companies, hospitals, whatever bill might come up. We call them, say, hey, this is ideas landed on my desk. Wanted to pick your brain on what this says and how you think it's going to affect you. They give the input back to us. We take it back to our committees where bills go first. When a bill is written, it goes to a committee for a public hearing. We try to bring people down to testify and give their input as well. After that process, the committee has what they call an executive session, where they vote on the bill, whether it's good enough for them to go to the whole floor for everybody to vote on, or whether the bill gets killed right there in committee. I'd probably say 97% of the time, every bill gets through committee, unfortunately, and some committees are afraid to kill bills. That makes it tough for us on the floor to have to try to decide. But even before a bill goes from committee to the floor, it goes through our caucus process. We're all now 64 of us in the Republican Assembly Caucus. We'll sit down and talk about every bill that goes onto our calendar, whether we think it's a good enough idea or not. And the rule that we have in our caucus is if we can't get 50 people to be on board with the bill that we're trying to present to the floor, and we don't have enough votes for it ourselves, then that bill doesn't advance out of the caucus and doesn't make it to the floor calendar. Mm. When it does make it to the floor calendar, it gets scheduled for a day on the Assembly floor. Gets brought up and gets introduced, and both sides have a chance to take their votes. And my philosophy and my thoughts on this is that if a representative is not read up well enough on the bill and worked enough on the bill with their constituents to know how it affects them, I would hope that they would either vote no or ask that the bill be sent back to committee, which doesn't happen a whole lot either. So people just tend to cast their vote based on what their personal feelings are sometimes, because either they didn't get a lot of input or they didn't do a lot of homework. So most, I'd say, out of the 2,000 some bills that get drafted in a given session, I'd say 60% of them make it to the floor. Probably 99% of those get passed, because once it gets through that entire process, there's not much left to debate on the floor because everybody's had a say by the time we vote on it, basically. Then those bills end up going to the Senate, unless they came from the Senate, because in our system of government, both chambers have to pass it before it goes to the governor's office. Then the governor's office gets 10 days from final passage to decide if they're going to pass it or veto it or what they're going to do with it. And if they pass it, he signs it into law, and if he doesn't pass it, the legislature gets a chance with a two-thirds majority to override a veto, which the Senate now has a two-thirds majority for the first time in probably 60-some years, I think it was. The Assembly is two votes short of that. So there will probably be some overrides this session, whereas Governor Evers had 126 vetoes last session. I think that a good amount of those bills will come back, and some of them will probably be overridden and written into law. So that's basically the process. Is it ends up on the governor's desk, yay or nay, and then we decide if that's the final nay or if it's going to be a yay in the end by all of us together again.
I really appreciate that breakdown, Scott. Thank you for that. And Bart, I wanted to bring it up, have you somebody who really knows what they're talking about discussing that and telling that, but also to get the knowledge out there, hopefully more people are caught up to date on that now too, but to lead into the next thing here, because going into the election, we saw the numbers of what was on people's minds, why were they voting the way that they did. We saw a lot of inflation, crime, securing the border, expanding domestic energy, keeping taxes low, a lot of these things brought up as the conversation of why people voted either red or blue or independent or what have you. Now that you have those results and you have the people that are in office, how much do you actually think can get done when it comes to these subjects?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, every election in Wisconsin the last 4 years, for some reason or another, at the end of it all comes down to, well, my side lost, so it's gerrymandering, or my side lost and it's a stolen election. So My ultimate goal these next 2 years is to put that crap to rest. I'm just so tired of hearing it from either side when somebody loses, because candidates win or lose elections because of the quality of the candidate that they are. And if you look at any map throughout the central Wisconsin area, I've won every municipality for every election for the last four elections. There's no gerrymandering. It's not possible unless you somehow stretch my district all the way down to Madison somehow and messed around with it that way, that you're going to have a gerrymandering effect here. On the other side of it, stolen elections is an absolutely ridiculous idea, because every single clerk in this district does yeoman's effort to make sure everything's safe and secure. So I want to put those two things to bed first. There's no gerrymander effect, there's no cheating. So now we can move on to the next level, right? And when we talk to people, when we're knocking on doors all summer long, I know what their issues are. This past election came down to two things. It was inflation versus abortion. That's exactly how people voted in this district. That is exactly how people voted in central Wisconsin. And I can say for a certainty within this congressional district even. Those two things have to be addressed first. As far as our abortion bill, we've got to figure out a way that we can follow the needs of the 80% of the people who have told us over and over again that we've got to find exceptions to this 1849 law that is now on the books because of the overturn of Roe versus Wade. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. The governor said he's not going to accept an exceptions bill, exceptions in the case of rape, incest, and the health of the mother. I think that's where 80% of people are. I'm sure we're going to see a bill to get that done. It'll end up on his desk. He'll have to decide. Inflation. We've got a $6.6 billion surplus in a time of inflation where people are having problems spending money because they're sending too much darn money to Madison, sending too much darn money to Washington. Those surpluses have to come back, and we have to find a way to offset the cost of inflation with those surpluses to people and ease their pocketbook problems for the time being. So we're going to find a way to offset, whether it's tax rates or sales tax or property tax or something like that, that we can put a chunk of this money towards relieving that burden on people because of inflation. Those two issues are exactly what caused the election to turn out the way it did. Both sides were energized on each one of those issues, and both came to the polls telling the people they elected to go fix those issues. And that's what we have to do immediately when we get back in January.
Scott, I want to go backwards for a second here. Just rewind. You mentioned gerrymandering. I do. I think it's only fair to say that I think people should always do their homework on these subjects, not just take you or I, as gospel. Go ahead and do your homework on these things. And I, if I understand right, you're talking about Wisconsin specifically. You're not talking about like states like Florida and that, are you?
I can't. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
I
okay. Just want to be Florida, sure here, because I think that there's some clear cut cases in other states.
Yeah, okay. Florida and Illinois. Some of those maps in Illinois are just, they go from Springfield all the way up to Chicago sometimes.
There is some crazy stuff going on in our country, but I just wanted to be specific about that. And
yeah.
When it comes, and I we've got about 5 minutes left, so there's a lot of things we could dissect there, but I did want to make sure that we had time to talk about something else. So good points made there. Moving on to renewable energy. I know that last month, I want to say it was in the middle of the month sometime last month, you were at UW-Milwaukee talking yeah. about this. Can we? How did that go? What did you guys discuss?
Yeah, it was an interesting invite to get down to UW-Milwaukee to talk about the future of renewables and how it would affect, you know, rural communities in particular. That's kind of the focus of the thing that I had spoke on. And obviously here we're in kind of a epicenter of renewable energy increase because of solar farm in Saratoga. We've got one now over in the Wautoma area. We've got a gigantic one over in the Bancroft Plover area, and so renewables are on people's minds right now, and it's all of a land use situation. We've got to involve our local governments and figuring out where these can be placed and how they can be used. But we talked about the absolute need for renewables and how it can actually reinvigorize rural economies, because bringing people to install these, to manage them, to operate them, that brings investment, that brings people to employment situations, that brings things that districts need, and that's interest in the land that they have and the people that live within them. So I think my involvement with that was trying to encourage these major titans of corporations across the state of Wisconsin who were there, that Central Wisconsin is a wide open space, that, you know, you look at states that thrive in the rural renewable energies, they look a lot like our landscape does, especially down here in Adams County, where it's flat, open, wide open spaces, lots of land that wants to be used, you know, timber companies that aren't going to use it anymore and just sitting there in the holding patterns. So making the pitch to these titans of corporations across the country to say, hey, look at our area for some investment opportunities. I know there's some people that don't like the idea of going to renewable. You know, I think it's just something that's happening because when these corporations have money to invest, they're making the choices. We're not necessarily changing government mandates on them. We do have a 25% renewable mandate in the state of Wisconsin right now. We're far beyond that already because of how corporations are looking at their investment portfolios when it comes to renewables and doing it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So why not encourage them to look in areas where it makes sense? And I think that was the nice thing about this.
Yeah.
UW-Milwaukee.
Scott, I don't want to sound like I'm putting words in your mouth or anybody else's or anything, but it does sound like you, this group, we're talking about holding businesses, these companies more accountable. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a nice way to bridge that gap. So we had folks there from Foxconn and some of the bigger international markets that were trying to figure out what role government could have in encouraging them to be able to do more and not get in their way to do more if they wanted. So that's kind of the conversation.
Hmm. Scott, got any fun things going on this weekend?
Man, it is a holiday crazy weekend right now. So Wautoma had Christmas parade yesterday. We got tree lighting in Bancroft tonight. We got holiday parade in Plainfield tomorrow night. So it is bing, bang, boom. And then the Coosa hometown Christmas parade this weekend. So it is Christmas galore in the district this week. So we're all over to as many events we can get to.
Good to hear, sir, and always good to talk to you. Thank you so much for always having the transparent, fun conversation. Looking forward to talking again next month.
Absolutely. Take care.
You too.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to you and yours, Scott, too. Yeah. Thank you. Again, Representative Scott Crook, Wisconsin State Assembly, District 72 Representative. Get that all the title in there for him. Thank you, Scott, for the conversation. Stick around, everybody. We got Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater's Miracle on 34th Street cast, director, all coming up right here on Morning Magazine at WFHR.
Pride. Left corner, three in the way. Got it.
Excellence.
Yes, it counts. And a foul.
Commitment.
Drops the hammer. Thank you and good night.
For Badgers, they're not just words. They're words to live by.
It's over. Let's have a party, Badger Nation.
This is your radio home for the Badgers.
Catch all the Badgers men's basketball action in the Big Ten this year right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
The Devil's Advocates.
Well, if the rapture comes, I hope they take me and leave Dom.
If the rapture comes, we'll be here tomorrow, Mike, taking your calls. We certainly appreciate it. 844-967-2789.
Come on, man. You must mean the royal we.
So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Hey, if you want to go meet your maker, Crudy, don't let me stop you.
I'm your maker, man. 844. You've already met him.
What if one day you went to your secret hiding place, you know, that spot that only you know about, and instead of what you came for, you found something a little different? What if instead of your private stash, you found a simple phone number, 1-800-662-HELP? What would you do? Would you stop and give it some thought? Would you make the call? The truth is, all drug use comes with risk. Before those risks become real, before drugs turn your life upside down, before drugs take their toll on you and your family, know that there is help. You can quit. If you or someone you love is struggling with drug use or prescription drug misuse, call 1-800-662-HELP for 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, or go to samhsa.gov/thereishelp.
WFHR Weather is sponsored by Hartle Monuments, still at 1915 Baker Drive, Wisconsin Rapids. The monument you create will be remembered by family and friends for years to come. Hartle Monuments will make it special. Let our experience show. Hartle Monuments, since 1901.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Overcast this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 45. Southerly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast skies again tonight. Chance for mixed precipitation. Lows dip down to about 10 above. Bright sunshine expected tomorrow. Highs level off around 19. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 33.
Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine, part two for this December 2nd, 2022. It is 10:33 on the clock. You have your host, James J. here, and I am joined right now, feels so good to say this, by Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, the cast director of their most recent holiday production, Miracle on 34th Street. It's going to be premiering December 9th. Good morning, gang.
Good morning.
Hey,
good morning.
Hey, how's everybody doing today?
Quite well.
Good? Yeah. Nice. Super. Let's go ahead and introduce everybody first. We have director of Miracle on 34th Street, Susan Egrin, with us. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
And cast member Linda Garski. Good morning, Linda.
Hey.
Always good to see you. And Andy is here with us. Andy, I don't know your last name.
Kleckner.
Thank God I didn't have to say that. No, Andy, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate the time, you guys. I want to journalistically let everybody know right away, out the cuff, I am incredibly biased about all of these people and WRCT. There is going to be no integrity in this interview whatsoever. I have to admit, too, for being a kid that didn't grow up with a lot of Christmas movies, Miracle on 34th Street was one of those ones that every year played. My Nana and Papa watched it. My mom and dad watched it. And we come from my mom's side of the family in a lawyer family. And I think that was part of what brought it in. And part of, as a kid, what I liked about Miracle on 34th Street was this, like,
folktale brought to real life, and the idea of that, and the idea of taking this character and bringing him to a courtroom and all that. I thought the fish out of water thing, all of those things were so darn cool. But I do want to, before we get too deep into the woods here and everything, I do want to go over, for those that may not know, what Miracle on 34th Street is. So, Sue, would you mind kind of giving us a little bit of the outline of the plot?
Okay. Well, and the plot, as you said, it brings Kris Kringle into, it's a different take than anybody else normally uses. Mm-hmm. Here we have Kris Kringle, who is Santa Claus, makes no bones about the fact that he's Santa Claus, but he's living in the real world. And he's kind of an odd duck in the real world. You know, he has been living in an old folks' home, mm-hmm. kind of a thing, but a nice one, you know, more mm-hmm. like unassisted living.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so he lives with senior citizens, other senior. His reindeer are not at the North Pole. They're at the New York Zoo, where he visits them every single day. Mm-hmm. It's about Kris and how he's dealing with everyday problems. And then along comes this woman, Doris, who's running. She's personnel manager of Macy's, and they need a Santa because they're Santa for the parade. He's drunk. And so Kris walks into this world of retail, you know, where he normally isn't, but he's really kind of directly connected to it. And he starts changing the lives of the people around him as they kind of start enriching his life as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's a very different kind of Christmas magic. You don't see magic.
Right.
Per se. You see him, as he says, he has one line where he says, well, Santa Claus has a lot of connections. He can make things happen because he knows people, kind of a thing, which makes one of my, Vito's line, I know a guy who knows a guy, different thing. But, yeah. It really is. It's putting Kris Kringle more in the light of reality.
It's such a interesting show, and especially to put it on in 2022. Mm-hmm. I think with so much of the stuff that's gone on in the last 7 to 10 years, news-wise and everything, having a story where it's all about this character and him proving himself, quote-unquote, proving mm-hmm. himself exactly. to be real, and what's yeah. real and what isn't and all these things. There's so many different layers to a show like this, and it's such a... I find it so interesting that I don't know if you sat down and said, okay, I'm going to write a play and that's going to create hope, that's going to create faith in things. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you would do that, but this play really does. This script, they really got it right. It really does that. It really can do those things organically for somebody. And bringing up really what the season, so much of what the essence of the season is.
Yes, and it's, I also feel that it's kind of, you know, we talk about what is crazy, who is crazy, how do you define reality, how do you define a belief system, because here is a man who says he is Kris Kringle. Is he harming anybody by that? No, he's not. In fact, he's making people's lives better, whoever he touches. But then you've got the legal system, reality, kicking in saying, well, the people that live in reality only are saying, you have to be nuts and you have to be confined. Because you must be a danger because you're not living in reality.
Right.
And as someone, I mean, I came from the Twin Cities working downtown Minneapolis for a number of years, and you see a lot of crazies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're walking around. They had tinfoil on their heads and their mittens and whatever, but people are leaving them alone because, sure, you got the preacher down there on his soapbox. Is he hurting anybody? No. He's actually kind of interesting to listen to sometimes.
Sometimes.
But that's Kris. He's not harming anyone, so why confine him?
We've been talking a lot about mental health the last couple of years, and I think that that's another interesting layer when it comes to this story and the subject, too. And again, there's so much just like good in it. There's such like good spirits that are created from it, from the script, the actors, and that's where I want to go next, talking about the cast. I had the complete cast list here. My computer hates me, so I don't have it now. But I did want to get into your guys' characters. Andy, Linda, want to touch on yours. For those that aren't here, we'll mention them after.
after. But first, sure. Linda. Man, it's good to see you, Linda. It's
hey,
good to
Dave.
See you. How you been?
I've been fine. Yeah,
I just want to catch up with you. But actually, we should do our job. We should do our job.
Okay.
What is your character's name? And what about? Can you tell us a little bit about her?
I am Ms. Sawyer. And the best word to describe her, I cannot use on the radio. She is the vocational guidance counselor for Macy's. And she comes in and her whole goal is to get Kris Kringle locked up. And she's very condescending, mm-hmm. and she's very pompous, and she's not particularly nice, and he just trolls her. He owns her big time. It's kind of fun to watch yeah. from his point of view, because I know how I'm behaving.
She's our villain.
Yeah.
I'm the villain.
Which is a little different for me to see you as a villain. Like I don't know how often you've gotten to play villains before or anything like that. Not very often.
I don't think I've ever really played a villain before.
So. Yeah.
This is my first bad guy. People will probably boo me at some point.
So, and you have not, I don't know how you're going to react to that because you don't get a lot of that.
Well, I should have got it last night because I dropped a whole bunch of lines in rehearsal.
Get it out of the way now.
Get it out of the way now. Yeah.
So between that, taking on a different style of role and also haven't, you know, gotten to see you as much on the stage lately, you've been more behind the scenes and directing mm-hmm. and everything. Is there a reason why you wanted to get out there? Was there something that pulled you to this character?
Me. I wasn't gonna say it,
but yeah.
I said, come audition, please. Because you need me? I said, yes, I do.
So I did. And I'm glad I did. Because this has been a lot of fun. Yeah. And I'd like to mention we have so many wonderful kids in this production that have been so fun to get to learn and see them starting to open up and blossom has just been a thrill.
And eight children.
Oh boy.
That's the ages of 8 and 15.
Yeah, yeah, that's fun. That just makes a fun
that's
backstage
a word for it.
Yes, that's there's an F word. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Andy, how about your character?
So I'm playing Fred Gailey, who is the lawyer and kind of romantic love interest of Doris Walker.
He's the hero.
Yeah.
So yeah. I feel like Fred's character is kind of taken in by, at least at first, how nice of a guy Kris Kringle seems to be. And then kind of it snowballs from there and really is a believer that this guy really is Santa Claus and wants to prove it to everybody.
Yeah, Fred is a believer.
Yeah.
He believes in love, first and foremost, and he has to, you know, he's trying to get through Doris's wall in that regard. You know, and he believes in magic.
Mm-hmm.
Not literal magic, but he believes that love is magic, for instance. He believes in people. He likes to make connections. He is hired to look after Doris's 10-year-old daughter, Susan. And, you know, and he loves her and becomes her caretaker and caregiver. And he's just a believer in general in the goodness of people and in the magic of love, the power of love. And yeah, so he's just an all-around good guy.
He's got so many great lines, too. There's so many good lines that you have in this one. Andy, I don't believe I've seen you in the WRCT stage. Is this a new show for you? Have you been there many times?
I've seen shows there. This is my very first play that I'm participating in being an actor in. I've been on the stage before, but that was like 30-plus years ago. In high school, I was in a rock band, and I was a singer. I did kind of a swing choir thing in high school as well. But this is really my first time acting, so.
Right on. Yeah. Andy, I say this from the bottom of my heart. Run. Run right now.
Oh, no. It's in his contract. He has to come back.
Yeah, I know very well those contracts. Welcome to the fold. It is great to have you, and you are going to love yourself and get used to WRCT, because you are going to be going there a lot. Once they pull you in, you never get out.
And we love him. He brought his daughter Natalie in to audition.
Nice.
And I didn't have a Fred. I needed someone, and I think Linda and I would just said, why don't you read? And he was sucker, he read. And he read so well. Mm. He really, yes, he didn't have the acting experience, but as his wife said, he reads to his kids all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just, the act of reading and reading with intelligence and reading with feeling, he read beautifully.
Yeah.
So yeah, we nabbed him.
Andy, as somebody who is new to this, have you been enjoying the process? You've been having a good time with it?
I have loved it. It's been, I mean, these people are, they're so loving and welcoming, and that's great because I think, you know, I'll just say this, and I've already said it, but
yeah.
I'm a volunteer in this, not in the sense that I'm doing a community service, but I'm here voluntarily doing it. Right? Having been a volunteer before, the worst mistake you can make with volunteers is not to give them any direction. Mm. And so in this, you get a ton of direction and criticism, and it's good and it's positive, and you know, you screw up and then you fix it, and or at least you try, and then mm-hmm. there's all kinds
very hard.
There's all kinds of affirmation from everybody, the cast and Susan, and everybody's been so welcoming. I definitely feel the hooks of this. I think I have a new hobby.
Good.
Very cool to hear, and I'm happy for you, happy for the family, and you know, take those words to verbatim, all of you out there listening, because one of the things we like to do at this time when we're talking to WRCT is encourage people out there to audition, to come down, work behind the scenes, work in front of the scenes, spread the word about these shows. All are welcome at WRCT. We want everybody down there. We want to make it tough on these directors to choose actors. Mm-hmm. We want to give them more and more options and more people down there.
That would be it, yes.
Create even bigger turnouts for these things. We certainly encourage you to take in these shows, but just as much we encourage you to be a part of them. And everybody is welcome, don't care who you are. They even take people like me. Insane people they will take. So
the
encourage you to.
Hair.
Yes. I still don't know why you cast me. I don't. I want to get into that a little bit, but before we do, let's just, you don't have to go through every single character, but let's name some of the bigger names, some of the bigger characters that are cast. And who's playing them? I know our good friend Beth Habhacker is going to be playing one of the characters.
Right. Beth is Doris.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chris Williams is Chris Kringle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really handy.
It really works out. Really works.
Yeah. And he doesn't know if I'm calling his character name or his real name.
Right.
I like that. Let's see. Oh, and Andy's daughter Natalie is playing Susan.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have, let me see. Mike Edgren is playing Macy. And drunk Santa.
Yeah. I saw the drunk Santa part right away. I'm like, oh, there's a little tight cap.
Yeah. We've got Phil Hartley's back on the stage.
Yeah.
So he's got a number of roles, but his main role is, he's playing Bloomingdale with Macy and Bloomingdale, but he's also playing Halloran, Judge Harper's marketing strategist.
Mm-hmm.
Campaign manager.
Right.
And Harper is Dick Antonosia.
Mm. Another great actor guy.
Yeah. Oh, he's fun. Let me see. And then we've got Anne. Oh shoot, I'm blanking on her last name.
Well, Anne is in it.
Anne,
and we say
Anne
hi
plays
to Anne.
Shell Hammer.
Yes.
Yep. And let's see. Oh, and we've got kids. Oh,
yeah.
We've got Don Mankel and Dawn. Oh, don't ask me this. I'm lucky if I remember first names.
I'm lucky you remember me. I'm like, I know. I hear you.
But we have others, and Vito, who can...
Right.
Vito needs no last name.
I know. You mentioned a lot of kids. I know Seth and Beth, they have one of their boys in this.
Right. Anders, the youngest.
We have some other great cast members in this as well. A great collection of WRCT, regulars and some newer people like Andy here and such.
Mm-hmm.
And I know both of you, that's something that I don't want to say you go into every play to cast it like I'm going to do this. But I know it's something that in the back of your minds you'd like to be able to do. Was that something that kind of like came into the fold easy for you on this one, Sue, or was it something you kind of had to, I don't want to say force, but kind of work into it, where you had that mix?
No, in this kind of show, when you have a cast of thousands,
mm-hmm.
You're hoping for a lot of people to audition. And I was like, I can't say that I had enough to cast it twice.
Sure.
But I did have enough to fill the roles that I needed to fill and fill them nicely. The one stretch is maybe I have a 13-year-old who plays Finley, the court bailiff.
Hey.
But she's tall.
She's tall. Come on.
She's tall. When I agreed to direct this show, I thought, well, the elves could be, the Macy's elves. I pictured they could be any age.
Mm-hmm.
They could be teenagers. This is their Christmas break job.
Right.
Or they could be retired senior citizens. And I thought I can make this work no matter who I have.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, I had, oh gosh, well I had a whole gaggle of 13-year-old girls, six 13-year-old girls, one 15-year-old boy, who auditioned. you know. So I thought, well, okay, let's make them all elves.
You know, there you go.
Let's make them all Macy's elves. And Macy's elves come in and out throughout the show, both acts. You know, sometimes they're just working there, and they're always in Chris's corner. So sometimes they're protesters.
Mm-hmm.
Ours do carry protest signs.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the court being rabble-rousers, you know. And they also help bring in all the mailbags at the end. You
Very
know,
cool.
We have a whole parade of people bringing in mailbags.
I've mentioned before on the air many times, my two favorite directors to work with at WRCT happen to be here right now, and Linda and Susan. I get better every time I work with you guys. And one of the things that I enjoy about working with you is that, but also I've never not had fun with your shows, and I've never not been kind of taken back by certain things that I didn't see, that I, when I read the script, I didn't think of that. No, I don't know where they thought of that or something. And a lot of that sometimes has to do with the script, or I mean, the stage or certain things. And other times it has to do with an actor or a character choice or something like that. With a show like this, it's so iconic. I think of like a Baskerville when we did that. And we walk in and day one, you're like, I have this, this, and this idea to kind of modernize it, if you will, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Did you do any of that with Miracle? Were there any kind of changes like that that you did to did you modernize it? Did you keep it the same as it always is? Were there different things that you did to kind of make it your own, if you will?
Well, the first thing I did was I updated it. Instead of 1930s, you know, I put it up to 1990.
Okay, so it is, okay, brought into the fold.
It is,
okay,
and, cool. And right. That was purely a practical decision because it's easier to costume.
Well, yeah.
Costume and hair is a heck of a lot easier, and so that's what we did, you know. But other than that, I think because I have modern teenage elves, I think they have brought things up, you know, modernized it quite a bit, and in their protests, you know, we've allowed that to happen. Just the kinds. I don't think I've really changed it that much otherwise.
It's subtle tweaks here and there especially with, like you said, just as simpler, easier for a community theater play to put on a more modern piece than a period piece or something like that sometimes.
And
so.
There are things that I've added, like I added a calendar. We couldn't do an advent calendar.
Mm-hmm.
That's too much. But we have calendar pages that Phil Hartley very kindly printed for us.
Yeah.
He printed a lot of stuff.
Shout out
to
Quality Plus.
Yes, very much so. Phil's been a huge help.
Yeah.
But we have this, they're on an easel and they're calendar pages, and one of the elves just flips the pages mm-hmm. during scene changes, so that, and the first one starts with, you know, November, whatever it is, 25th, 1990.
Yeah.
1990.
Yeah.
So that the audience automatically knows, okay, we're slightly updated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then.
I like that.
Yeah, and the page just to help set the scene that way.
It's subtle things, but it goes a long way, and it helps carry the story. It helps keep people engaged and pulls them in, and especially when you have a story that has been told so many times, it's been seen so many times, and if it's not already, in a couple weeks, it'll be playing, you know, at some station on some channel, on some cable channel or something like that. And you have a story like that, I imagine that whether you want to or not, you kind of almost creatively are pushed to do some things a little differently, and certainly with a play as opposed to a movie, you're always going to have differences. There's that part of it too. So that's interesting. Now I want to ask the actors this question, and I'll ask both of you this. Have you seen, I feel this is pretty self-explanatory, if you've seen Miracle on 34th Street before, so you can go ahead and quickly answer that, yes. But how did that impact you playing these characters? I know for me, I was kind of blessed without seeing It's a Wonderful Life. I hadn't seen it in 10, 20 years. So when I got playing George Bailey, I wasn't trying to be Jimmy Stewart because I couldn't necessarily remember everything that Jimmy Stewart did. I actually remembered him from Mr. Smith Goes to Washington more. So if I was playing Jimmy, it was probably like the wrong character in the wrong movie. I was doing it some weird way or something like that. But for you, Linda, especially somebody that has such a good history with these roles and these characters, I've worked with you on set so many times, and I love how you chameleon into a role. But
it's got to be a little bit different when you have something in your head already of somebody who has played this character. Did that play into how you play her at all, or was you even thinking of that?
Nope. You know why? Because I have never seen Miracle on 34th.
Okay.
Street.
All right. Wow.
I have never seen it.
Never. I would not have guessed that.
I did not ever see. I don't know why I've never seen it, but then I chose not to. I don't like to get preconceived ideas of what I'm going to do up there. I did the same thing when I was in Steel Magnolias. The movie was out around then. Didn't watch it because, you know, you just, I don't want to be Dolly Parton.
Right. Well, yeah.
But yeah, it's easier sometimes if you don't see that movie because you're going in with a clean slate.
And yeah.
Coming up with your own thing with the director.
Hmm.
And the script automatically, the way this particular script is written, it already had some traditional male roles switched to female roles.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just did that. Sawyer could have been either a man or a woman, and I wanted another strong woman.
Hmm. Very cool.
On the stage. So that's an upgrade. But yeah. This, like I said, the people who put this together had already started that.
Linda, were you able to let loose with this character a little bit more than some because of the villain aspect or anything?
I probably will as soon as I'm confident on all of my lines.
Sure, sure.
I have a big piece of dialogue I've been working on extremely hard, but trust me, Susan, I'm going to loosen up and you're probably going to clobber me.
I have no doubt.
Andy, how about you? Have you seen Miracle? And how has that been going? Especially somebody who doesn't have a ton of experience with something like this, it might be easier in our head instinctively to play a certain character like you've seen it played.
Well, like Linda, I have never seen Miracle on 34th Street before I was cast. But then I've watched both the 2000-ish movie and then the black and white movie. So I've seen them both now. I don't think I noticed that a lot of the lines are the same or very similar. So mm-hmm. there's that. But I think more of an influence for me, especially the lawyer part, is like Boston Legal. It's particularly Alan Shore. Yeah.
Love
I want to, you know, I aspire to be convincing and, you know, entertaining like that. So that's what I'm trying.
Ooh, very cool. And very well done by you. I think that's really insightful. That's a really good choice. I would have chose Jack McCoy, but that's all right. You know, I'm a Law and Order guy. I think that's one of the things that pulled me in as a kid to this story was the Law and Order kind of Christmas episode that it is. So in so many ways, or any other good legal show that you can mention. I think that is a fun part of this, along with all the just pure innocence that it brings. Because even if you know, chances are the majority of people that watch this show are going to be adults. And you go into it with an adult mindset. And like all of us, the farther we get away from childhood, the more we forget what it's like to be a child. This play forces you to think about, is he real? And immediately you are brought back to being a kid. And there's very few things in life that can organically create something like that. And I think that's what's a part of what's so fun about this show. I thank you both for your answers, for your time. Susan, I want to go over the details of the show real quick, when people can catch this. Miracle on 34th Street premieres December 9th, 10th, 15th, 16th, and 17th. 7 o'clock shows for all those on December 17th. You guys got double duty. There will be a 2 o'clock matinee on that Saturday.
Correct.
And then the 7 o'clock show.
Correct.
Anything we should warn the audience about? Language, special effects? No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Linda, just beware of it.
Get ready to laugh. We should warn people your side may hurt afterwards a little bit because there's going to be some fun moments there.
Yes. You know, this is not a farce like I normally direct. It's not even really a rom-com. It's just a really sweet Christmas story. But yes, there is humor in it. And when you have a few, like Linda and like my husband, mm-hmm. and a couple others, you know, they cannot be on stage without getting laughs.
Oh, yeah.
So, and yeah. So there will be. There's some very funny moments.
It's going to be a great production. It is a wonderful not only event for, you know, you or a date or you and the family. Come one, come all, because there is nobody that is not going to enjoy a show like this. You can get your tickets at wrctheater.org. You can also get them the day of any of these shows. And we'll be talking about this ad nauseum up until the running of the show and everything. So promise you, people will get this information multiple times. But again, December 9th is opening night. night and really would love to see a great turnout. Let's make sure to get them a good audience, get as many people into that, and pack that WRCT theater as we can. Of course, WRCT has all their shows at the Centralia Center. You go over there, you walk in, boom, you'll see where the theater is right away. Keep that in mind, too, for the studio theater productions that they have going on throughout the year as well. A lot of great theater going on there. And as we always like to say here, and we've been saying for years, buy local, support local. That extends to the arts. We encourage you to take in things at WRCT and all of it. We have a lot of great local theaters around here. Encourage you to support all of them as much as you can. Our friends at the Arts Council have great shows going on. All of these things in your area. We are so spoiled in this area with the arts and all the amazing artists we have. Encourage you to come down to these shows. Take them in. It's going to be a blast. Guys, break a leg. Have a great time. Please tell everybody else the same for me. Wishing everybody well. Looking forward to seeing this production, this show, and looking forward to working with you all again very soon.
Thank you.
Thanks same for the here. Time, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Love you back. Very love you, too. And appreciate all of you. And again, you can get your tickets at wrctheater.org. It's also where you can go to find out more information about this and other things we've talked about. Encourage you to follow Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater on all their social media aspects, too. Facebook, Instagram. Look for them, find them, follow them, support them. We will take a break.